Okay, so last week we did the Sugya of Ger Kata. I know we had technical difficulties, and I also didn't get it online because I accidentally interrupted the recording in the middle, so it's in two sections. Got to figure out how to get it up. But we have the background for the Sugya of Ger Kata. If a Ger, if parents come, or somehow the minor himself shows up in order to be converted, how exactly that works. So if you take a look at Sif Zayin, Reish Samaches Sif Zayin. So we just read through the Shulchan Aruch again, just to get going. So he says, Ovi Kochavim Katan Im Yish Lo Av. If you have an Ovi Kochavim who's a child, if he has a father, Yachol Gayeroso, he can convert him. Vim Ein Lo Av. If not, Uvaliz Gayero Imo Meviaso Liz Gayer based in Megayerinoso. But if not, and he comes to convert, or his mother comes to convert him, so Bastin would have to convert him. Now, there's a question what that means, meaning, who's converting, if he has a father, what does it mean he has a father, right? Everybody has a father. What does that mean if he has a father? It sounds like if his father is bringing him. Now, the problem is, who's his father, right? He shouldn't be related to any parents, right? If his father is not Jewish, so then what difference does it make if his father brings him? If his father is Jewish, so he technically has lost his familial relationship with his father. So it's unclear what exactly is that distinction, and we'll see Rav Moshe Feinstein kind of uses that in his tshuva that we're going to get through shortly. So somehow he appears in front of Basin, converts, Basin Megayrinoso, Shezuchusulo, and this is the key word, because it is a merit for him. What does it mean that it's a merit for him? So a child doesn't have the ability to make decisions like this, right? A child is not considered a bar das for the purpose of kinyan, for the purpose of acquisition, and for the purpose of making these life decisions. So he can become Jewish because it is a zechus, it's a merit for him. The zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. And it is and there is an idea that you could bring a merit to the person when he is not present. So what that means, we'll get to shortly about that. Let's just finish up this if. By the way, whether a child is converted by his father or Basin converted him, when he gets older, he can be mochi, he can protest. And if that's the case, if he protests, if he rejects his Jewishness, he would not be considered like a Yisrael Mumar, rather he would just be not Jewish, right? He would no longer be Jewish. So just one, I should have put this on the source sheet, I forgot to do so, but in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, in Rav Shechter's recollections of Shirim and stories from the Rav, so he quotes the following idea about Zachin La'adam Shelo B'fanav, right? How exactly does that work? That a person, so what is it in theory? In theory it is, as we spoke about last week, if I am walking down the street and I see something, last week he used the examples of Beis Yosef mezuzahs, which Bob probably still is looking for, Beis Yosef mezuzahs, and I see, oh, those would be perfect for Bob, right? Let me get them for him. I found three, coincidentally, and I decide, all right, these are hereby Bob's. So they actually become Bob's right away. I don't have to wait to tell Bob, hey, Bob, I found these three mezuzahs, do you want them? But actually, there's a form of acquisition that he gets right away. And that's quoted in the Gemara Maseches Chulin, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, amongst many other places in Shas. This is a real principle that comes up somewhat regularly over the course of the Gemara. So Rav Soloveitchik raised the following question. How exactly does that work? Do we say that his that it's his now, but he needs to recognize it later on? I mean, how does he actually acquire it? Am I acquiring it for him? No. It means I'm acquiring it for him for when he decides that he wants it. Meaning, Bob, when he, it's considered that he wants it now, but only because when he says he wants it later, we retroactively trace it back to the point that I want it now, right? That's possibility number one, right? I pick it up for him, it's his, but it's he only really kind of accepts it later on when he says he wants it retroactively to this point that I picked it up, right? That's idea number one. The other possibility is that, no, it's his because everybody knows that Bob happens to be looking for three Beis Yosef mezuzahs. right? And it says right now, no matter what. Okay, it's and he, the only way that it wouldn't be his is if later on Bob decides to reject it. If Bob says later on, oh no, I didn't want those mezuzahs, right? I wanted these other mezuzahs. So then he would reject it later on, and that would then, you know, go back to the spot that I picked it up. I wouldn't have actually picked it up for him. So he suggests that what would be the nafka mina between these two approaches? What does it sound like, right? So it sounds like the question is, does there actually have to be an acceptance later on, right? According to the first way we said it, right, it's his now. Because he's accepting it later on, it will be his retroactively till now. But what is that contingent upon? That's contingent upon Bob accepting it later on. Right, but if he doesn't actually accept it later on, he never actually was koneh. He never actually acquired it. On the other hand, if we say the other way, then no, it's his because obviously it's a good thing for him, and unless he rejects it, it's his. He never actually needs an acceptance by Bob. It works from him. It works for him right now, unless he rejects it later. Right. So how does that then apply to the laws of Geirus? Right. The nafka mina is, what if he never even found out about it? Right? If he never actually accepted nor rejected it. According to approach number one, he needs to accept it at some point. According to approach number two, no. As long as he never actually needs to accept it, it's his. Unless he rejects it, it wouldn't be. So by Geirus, it could be the same thing, right? If Geirus is working by way of Zachen La'adam Shelo B'fanav, right? Geirus is working because for a child, of course it's going to be good for him to be Jewish later on. What does it mean to be good, right? Well, good for him, we'll get to that later on. But of course it's good for him for it to be done later on. So according to approach number one, he still needs to accept it at some point. According to approach number two, he doesn't ever actually need to accept it. He just never needs to reject it. Right? So now you come to what about the classic case of Ger Katan Bizman Hazeh is a case of adoption. Well, the two regular cases where Ger Katan would show up is either parents that adopt a child or parents that convert as a family. Right? Those are going to be the two cases that we're going to come up. So in case number two, all right, they're a family of converts. All right, it's not going to be a big deal. But in case number one, where the child is adopted, so if the parent, let's say the parents never want the child to find out that he's adopted or she's adopted, right? So I'm not sure that, I don't think that that's the style anymore. I think generally children do know and they are told. That's what I understand. But if parents would not want to reveal to the child that they were adopted, so then the child would never think that they're not actually Jewish, right? They would just assume that they're Jewish the whole time. They never actually need to accept it. Right, so that would be only according to version number two. But according to version number one, there would actually need to be a point where the child accepts it in order to be Jewish. That's where Rav Soloveitchik pointed out as a ramification between those two ideas. He quotes a proof to this. He quotes a proof to one of the sides, because Gemara Maseches Gittin says that if, let's say, a person was zochem money for his friend, I'm walking down the street and I see, instead of three mezuzahs that I know Bob wants, I see $1,000 that I know Bob wants, right? And I hereby pick it up, having in mind that this is going to be for Bob, right? And then, actually, maybe I shouldn't have used a particular individual, because the case of the Gemara is that, and then the person passes away before finding out that the money was found for them, right? So what happens to that? What happens to that money? Is it considered considered a person's, right? In which case, it would work as Yerusha for his children. Or the person never actually gets it, in which case I'm the one walking around with $1,000. Instead of me giving it to whoever I was going to give it to, I could just pocket it for myself, right? That's the question there. The Gemara assumes that you actually could pass it on by way, it is considered the person's that I found it for, and that person could and would go via Yerusha to their children. So it seems like that's the way that we might assume halacha, that the zechiyah works right away, even if the person never even knows that they accepted it. However, he points out that maybe this wouldn't apply to Gairus, maybe this wouldn't apply to other cases, right? So it is not so clear how we pasket on this Shaila, which has major ramifications in this area, right? Do we actually ever need the child to have a Kabbalah in order for that acceptance to, in order for the Gairus to actually work? So I don't think we ever totally clarify an answer to that question. Psak, I didn't really see anybody taking a full stand on that idea. However, the Piskei Tshuva here on the bottom of the page assumes, and this we did look at last week, but the if you look towards the bottom of the Piskei Tshuva, he quotes from the Chasam Sofer. So on the copy page, it's five lines from the bottom. If you have the fancy of the Piskei Tshuva on that page, if you have a fancy schmancy edition of Shulchan Aruch, you're on your own. It's it's about two-thirds of the way through Piskei Tshuva Ches. So he's quoting from the Chasam Sofer, and he says, "V'chasavod heichad yachol limchos vade demiyakir ikar geiris lamafreya." That when he is mocha, if he protests, so certainly he is okay. He gets rid of the geiris retroactively. It's as if he was never actually Jewish. He says, "But wait a second, right? What about the things that he did as a Jew in the meantime?" So, for example, touched wine, or he got married, right? So he says, "Va'yayin hanisher shenagav." What about the wine that he touched in the meantime? Kodem me'machasel, before he made a protest. It says, "Hu b'chol mega ovikachavim katan b'yayin shelanu." Well, guess what? We call that yayin touched by a non-Jew, which might have, you know, whether it's adult or child might make a difference, but it's going to have the status of whatever, as if a non-Jew touched that wine, despite the fact that at the time everybody assumed he was Jewish. He says, same thing, being Baal Bas Yisrael, B'yosan Ben Tes, Nifsla Mikunin, and if he had relations with a Jewish girl, who was, and he was above the age of 9, guess what? She is now going to be considered as somebody who had relations with a non-Jew, and therefore prohibited to a Kohen. He says, however, says the Chasam Sofer, "Achanu ain't a tzrichin lachlish lezeh." We don't have to worry about this. Shema yimcha that he might reject it. V'alchei mevarchin b'shas tefilim anichin aso liga b'yayin o linasi li'ish o lisa li'israelis. But we don't assume that he's going to reject it. Rather, we let it go and we allow them to touch wine. We allow them to get married. We allow them to do these things. Now, wait a second. When's he getting married? Right? If he's getting married, it means he's above the age of 13. Right? He's going on for a while. So it could be that maybe the Chasam Sofer is under the assumption that maybe you don't have to tell him. Right? Maybe you don't have to tell him. He's adopted. Let him think that he was Jewish the entire time. And it's not, and we don't actually tell him, A, that they're adopted, and B, that they're actually a ger. I was just thinking that maybe he's that. But I don't know. If you ask the Chasam Sofer, do you ever actually have to tell him? I don't necessarily know what the Chasam Sofer would answer, but maybe there's an indication here that he would say you don't necessarily have to tell the child. Now, there are ramifications for the girl, because the girl would not be permitted to marry a Kohen, right? So you got to either tell her or direct the Shiduchim away from, strangely reject certain Shiduchim that may come her way. But it could be. But one could also have the approach that maybe a person does need to know. It's a question of how do you understand the idea of Zachen La'adam Shelo B'fanav. Okay, so that is idea number one. The next idea, and here we go in the sources. This source is actually right side up on the pages that you have.
Well, it's not right side anymore.
Oh. We have three tshuvas from Rav Moshe. So the first one, and we'll go in chronological order. I believe they're in chronological order. One is in Yoredei Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Nun Ches. If you notice, it says it's addressed to Gisi Ahuvi Harav Hagomarino Rav Nechemya Hakohen Shlita Av Beistin Be Toledo Shalom Avracha. All right, so he was the Rav in Toledo. Who is this? So Gisi means brother-in-law. It's Rav Moshe's brother-in-law, Rav Nechemya Hakohen, and it's not just a brother-in-law. He happens to be the person probably responsible for getting Rav Moshe to come to America. I went to review today in Rav Moshe's biography when I noticed it was addressed to him that Rav Moshe's sister-in-law, it's not his sister, it's it's HaKohen, he became Katz. His name was, where is it? I got it here someplace. His name was, there, Kastanovitz. and he shortened his name to the name Katz. If anybody has children that learned in the Mir Yeshiva and learned by Rav Yaakov Moshe Katz, he's one of the American Rabbanim there. He happens to be Rav Yitzchak Cohen's son-in-law, which is how I came to him. So Rav Yaakov Moshe Katz, I believe, is a grandson, or if not great-grandson, grandson of this, of the person who this tshuva is addressed to, Rav Nechemya HaKohen. His father was... What?
Because it was shortened to Katz, was he a Kohen?
Yes, he was a Kohen. Here, he's written as HaKohen, right? His name is Katz, but Rav Moshe wrote it as HaKohen. It could be that's why he didn't write his last name, because he wasn't sure what to call him. And Rav Moshe's father-in-law's name was Rav Yaakov Moshe Kastanovitz. That's who he's named for, Rav Moshe Feinstein's father-in-law. So it's an interesting story. He actually get in touch somehow with a senator from Idaho, the Senator William Edgar Borah, who apparently, there's two issues. One is getting him into America, and B, getting him out of Russia. So the easier part was getting him into America. The harder part was getting him into Russia. But apparently this Senator Borah from Idaho was in good graces with the Russians because somebody might want to go back and explain the politics at the time. But this Republican from Idaho was the first senator to recognize the communist regime in Russia. So... go figure. So he was the one who, and he was the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee at the time. So he had a relationship with the Russian ambassador, and they were able to finally get this meeting with him. The Russian ambassador was like, I want nothing to do with this, but agreed to forward the letters that he got from this senator, as well as a couple of congressmen that they had relationships with, and was actually able to get Rav Moshe out of Russia in this way. So anyways, that's perhaps explains the nice titles that he has in the beginning of this tshuva. So the title of the tshuva is Beger Katan Shemal Shelo Bifnei Beis Din in Tzarech LaHatif Dam Bris Bifnei Beis Din. Let's say you have a Ger Katan who had a Mila Shelo Bifnei Beis Din. Without a Beis Din present, does he need a Tafas Dam Bris? Now there's two reasons why he would be having a Bris not in front of Beis Din, right? One is that it was an unqualified Beis Din, right? That he had a Bris Mila, perhaps even L'shem Geirus, but the Beis Din wasn't qualified, right? That's issue number one. Issue number two is that, well, he was born, his father was Jewish, his mother wasn't. The family had decided we're going to raise this child as being Jewish, and they decided to give him a Bris Mila. So they called the Mohel and say, hey, I hear you give circumcisions. He said, sure, I'll come and give a circumcision. And he come and he gave him a Bris Mila, right? Not realizing that the parents are not Jewish. Now, it is somewhat part of the job of the Mohel to investigate some of these things, but whatever, this Mohel didn't. So Rav Moshe here.
Sorry, I didn't quite catch it. Neither parent was Jewish, or the mother wasn't Jewish and the father was.
Sorry, if the mother wasn't, the father was, right? So the last name is Schwartz or Goldberg or something, and the Mohel says, "Oh well, you know, Chaim Yankel Schwartz wants me to do a bris for his son, right? Of course, I'll go ahead and do it, right?" So those are the two possibilities that come up. They're a little different from each other. One of them, at least, was for the purpose of Geirus, but without a proper Beis Din. The second wasn't even for the purpose of Geirus, but it was Litzorach Mitzvah, right? So they both have pluses and minuses to those two, to both of those situations. So Rav Moshe has two important chidushim over the course of this tshuva. So the first one here, if you look on the rightmost column, I have about 10 lines there that are underlined. Rav Moshe raises the question. He says, how sure are we that you actually need a Beis Din by Geirus, right? So the truth is, it should be pretty sure, because the Dagul Meravava on the page actually explains it. We did this Dagul Meravava on a couple of Sifim earlier. Because earlier there was a discussion about do you need Beis Din there by Amila, and we actually assume that you don't. That the Shulchan Aruch says you don't actually require a Beis Din to be there by Mila, but the Rif and the Rambam say that you do. So ideally you should have a Beis Din there, but b'di'eved we wouldn't require you to. So the Dagul Meravava, the Rav Yecheskel Landau, the Noda Behuda says, whoa, hold on a second, that's by a older person who has a conversion, because, you know, their main conversion is going to come later on. But by a child, where what else is the child, right? The child has to do an act, right? The acts have to be a Maisa Basin, right? The story of a Ger Katan is of a parent bringing the child to Basin, right? So if that's the case, it sounds like you need a Basin for all three aspects of Gerus. So Rav Moshe suggests, he says, not sure, right? He first doesn't seem to accept the Dugel Miravava. And he says, not only that, he says, Volule de Mistafina, right, the part that I have underlined on the rightmost column, he says, Hayanir Lufianas Daisi, Daiti, Da Ari Hatur Da Mila Haisa Achar Hatvila, Vyisper De Gamke Moel Kedesova Harabon. He says, I think that the Shulchan Aruch is not even talking about the case where, that we normally do, where you have a Mila followed by Tevila, and the question is whether to have a basin by Mila. He says, I think that whole machlokas is only when Mila is coming after Tevila, right? If Mila comes after Tevila, so then the Rambam and the Rif require that you have a beis din there. But if the Mila is coming before Tevila, before he goes to the gate, I don't even think the Rambam and Rif hold that that's required. V'lachein kevan de b'hamila hu gomer uvan nichnas l'geirus tzarek shetehe lifnei beis din. Da'zehu tam ha'tevila shetzricha b'fnei shlosha k'd'isa b'bah. Right? Because the reason you need a beis din by Tevila is because that's the moment of geirus. But if you have the mila later, the opposite that tefila titzarech shlosha mila titzarech. Therefore, then if you're doing the mila after the tefila, so then you need the beis din by the mila, and not by the, meaning you need the beis din by the latest point. That's what Rav Moshe suggests. Well, sometimes you need a based in here, and sometimes you need a based in there. Let's just have a based in all the time, ideally. But really, it's be telling you what happens last. Because whatever happens last, that's when you really require the based in, whether it be tevila, whether it be mila. Okay, so that's Rav Moshe. That's the Rav Moshe's first chiddush. I saw in the sefer, there's a sefer out of. Alan Appel's listening, that Gabe Pollack gave me once upon a time when he was leaving back to New York, that goes through Rav Moshe's tshuvos and gives ha'aros on many of them. So he points out here on this tshuva that he quotes from Rav Usher Weiss, that Rav Usher Weiss disagrees with Rav Moshe, which I think Rav Usher Weiss is the first post-Rav Moshe era person to really take on Rav Moshe on a lot of tshuvos. Rabbi Arya Leibowitz just gave, if you're interested in this, just gave a series over the summer entitled Rav Moshe Feinstein and His Halachic Adversaries, where he went through several disputes between Rav Moshe and contemporaries who disagreed with him. Rav Moshe against Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rav Moshe against Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Moshe against Rav Henkin. He went through a couple of those. But he didn't cover any of Rav Moshe, of post-Rav Moshe people that argue on him, right? It was more about the dialogue between the two. Here, Rav Usher Weiss disagrees. He says, I don't think so. He says, that's not what the Shulchan Aruch says. That's quite a trick that Rav Moshe pulled, saying that the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a case when the Shulchan Aruch gives zero indication that that's the case that he's talking about. Okay? But take that or leave that. Then Rav Moshe comes on and says, but I think even further that it's unclear from the Shulchan Aruch, right? What did we read before? That an Av comes and is Megayer the child, or the mother, or someone, or the child, or the mother comes and is, and Basin converts him. So what about when the father brings him? Basin's not converting him? He has to convert in front of Basin, right? What is that talking about? So Rav Moshe suggests, fascinatingly, that what's Basin doing here? Right? What's Basin's decision? So normally, as we spoke about a couple of, weeks, months ago already at this point, right, Beis Din has a role of being like representatives of Klal Yisrael, representatives of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, in order to welcome the child. I mean, it's a functionary position, right? Beis Din is not necessarily judging anything. Beis Din is there because the mechanism of Geirus requires a Beis Din to be there, right? That's one thing Beis Din is doing. But in the case of a Ger Katan, you have Beis Din actually has a judgment responsibility. What is that responsibility? So the whole premise is that the child gets to convert because Zachen La'adam Shelo B'fanav. because it's a good thing for the child to convert. It's a good thing for the child to be Jewish. And therefore, we can merit the child. We can sort of acquire something on behalf of the child because it's a good thing for the child to be Jewish. Who decides whether it's a good thing for the child to be Jewish? So Rav Moshe says, Beis Din needs to make that decision. That's Beis Din's call. So when the father comes and brings the child, and the father and the child is clearly in a well-adjusted home, and the parents are frum, so like, all right, it's an easy decision, right? You don't even need Beis Din to make a decision on that. You just need Beis Din to be there for the functionary role of Beis Din. However, when it's if there's no father in the picture, or the child's coming themselves, or it's some kind of odd situation where it's a little unclear whether it's really going to work out for the child for him to be a convert or not. So if that's the case, so then you would require Beis Din to be present. So Rav Moshe circles back to this case. So the child who had his bris not in front of Beis Din. So first of all, he doesn't think that it's necessarily ma'akib, necessary for the Beis Din to be there, right? And according to Rav Moshe, the big chiddush is even according to the Rambam and the Rif. And then beyond that, he suggests that it might not be necessary for the Beis Din to be there in these circumstances where the child is being converted. Where the child is being converted by the father, and everything seems to be set up in a good way. Now it's a little hard to know whether that was the metzius, what exactly was the reality, but that's tshuva number one of Rav Moshe, that he doesn't think that a Beis Din would be ma'akev. Yeah.
The situation was that the child had a non-Jewish mother, and there is a bris, and then the question whether the child is Jewish or not, and the issue then would be, do you need a Beis Din, but he didn't have the mikvah, he didn't have the acceptance or anything else. I'm just puzzled about the whole situation. So Rav Moshe would say that he was converted because he had the bris.
So Rav Moshe says, and if you continue on to that was the bottom of the second column, the middle paragraph of the third column, he says that the mohel made a mila because he thought that the child was Jewish and chayv in a mila, right? It could be considered a mila for the purpose of geirus, and he says because it's like the child is doing mitzvah similarly to a woman who goes to the mikveh regularly, right? We had that sugi a couple of weeks ago, that a woman who's regularly going to the mikveh, we could assume that qualifies as her geirus tevila as well. So too, this mila could qualify as the geirus mila as well, while in the purpose of mitzvahs. Meaning, he is removed, what Rosh is doing, while he's saying a mila and tevila are necessary, the ikker geirus that you need a Beis Din for is the kabbalas hamitzvos, is the acceptance of mitzvos, right? And those are sort of mechanisms along the way that you may or may not need a Beis Din present for. So Rav Moshe is permitted. Now, truth is, I'm not sure what the case was. Like, it's not so difficult to get a Beis Din together and to do a tafas dam bris. It's not like such a terrible thing. I'm not sure why we're fighting so hard to avoid it, unless it's a situation where the parents don't want it. Or some kind of strange, sometimes, or the child doesn't want it. The child is saying, absolutely not, you're not the, something like that. Okay, now, the problem, there's a bit of a problem. Now, does everybody agree to this idea of Rav Moshe? So there is a major tshuva that seems to go against this tshuva of Rav Moshe, and believe it or not, it's Rav Moshe himself, right? Rav Moshe in Yerodeya Chelek Beis, Simon Kuf Chaf Ches, so that's the next page on your thing, is asked the question of Hinei B'davar Ger Shemal B'giyuso Shelo L'Shem Geirus Hanifsa B'Shulchan Aruch Right Shetzarech L'Hatif Dam Bris Ve'im Mavar Chen Aleh Batam, and Eshach explains, right, and he says in the case where the Moel knows that the mother is not Jewish, so he should try to get two other Jews that are around in order to have the bris for the purpose of geirus. And this happens, by the way. This is like sometimes publicly, sometimes not publicly, that the mohel knows that the father is that the mother is not Jewish, and he'll try to have two other frum people around, sometimes the caterer and the waiter, right, and say, oh, we're hereby going to be the you know, the what's it called? The beastin for this project. That's what Rav Moshe recommends. But then he continues on and says, and this is the underlined part, Vim lo nasa kein, kinir, shamoel chashav shagam ha'im ha'yehudis, v'nimsa shalo ya l'shem geiris, right? It didn't happen. The moel thought the mother was Jewish too, v'nimsa shalo, and therefore it wasn't for the purpose of geiris, o shamoel lo ya baki, or the moel just didn't know these things, and he thought that, oh, since the father is Jewish, maybe it means the child is too, afkopanim hu kevadai shalo ya l'shem geiris. It certainly wasn't for the purpose of geiris. And if you know who the mole is, you should go and ask him what he had in mind. And if not, you should go ahead and do a tafas dam bris. So, I don't know, you have this, you have a theory here between two tshuvas of Rav Moshe. The first one, was they're 20 years apart. The first one is Tufshin Aleph. The second one is Tufshin Chaf Aleph. I don't know what to do with it. The first one that we quoted is the more famous tshuva. That's the one that seems to be quoted all over the place. This one is not. In fact, I think... In that sefer I quoted before, which is how I found this tshuva, I forget who he quotes, but the achronim who discussed this say, it looks like Rav Moshe forgot what he wrote 20 years earlier. I don't know if you, I wouldn't say such a thing, but there is a stira in tshuvas of Rav Moshe as to what to do in this scenario, where it turns out that a bris was given l'shem mitzvah, and the mo'al didn't know that it was l'shem mitzvah. What we do b'zman hazeh, I don't know. I asked him to talk to Rabbi Eisenman yesterday. Next time I talk to Rabbi Eisenman, I'll ask him what the minug is in these cases.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
In the middle of the line last week, but it seems to me that mother isn't Jewish. Making this kid Jewish, then you're
making,
I'm not sure you're
Zochet. Yes.
Okay.
It can be worse off
if it's a Gentile.
Right. So we didn't clarify that, and the truth is, to clarify that is a difficult process, but that is the next thing I wanted to mention, right? And this is like the big question. This is the big question in Eretz Yisrael, right? What about converting a child when the parents are not dati, or the parents are not going to be shomer Torah mitzvos, or how shomer Torah mitzvos must the parents be? At what point do we call it a zechus? Do we call it a merit for the child? So I think the ball gets rolling here. I think the starting point is a tshuva from Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski, right? Most of the tshuvas, especially in this area where a convert in the case where not everybody is going to be totally from, right? So that's a 20th century shaila. So Rav Chaim Ozer gets the ball rolling in a tshuva Tafresh Tzadi Dalid. Okay, which truth is not so much before Rav Moshe's. Rav Moshe's was Tufshin Aleph. This is Tufresh Tzadi Dalid. It's only 7 years earlier, right? It's in Chelek Gimel of Achiezer, Simen Chaf Ches. It's the last page of your sources. This is another one from the Rabbi Simcha Kraus Sfarim collection when he let me into his library before he made Aliyah and said, you know, take what you want. So at the end of that, it's the end of that section where he kind of throws his hands up, right? It could start in the middle there. Mikol Makom Yesh Lomar, right in the middle of that paragraph. Yeshomer the Dafka Baofen Sheis Naikhi Yisrael the Havi Zchus Gomer. It's only when he's going to actually act as a Jew that it's going to be Zchus Gomer B'Chai Gavna. B'Chai Gavna Eino Limcha. So then he wouldn't be able to be mochav. But often she's naig the iser. If he's going to act in iser, after you call makam havi zechus, maybe it is considered a zechus, like it's written in the Beis Yitzchak, which actually probably discusses about efshar de lo havi zechus gomer. It's not a zechus. Uvray gavna yachol limchos legadluhu. Maybe he'd be able to be mocha when he gets older, as it's not a zechus. He's actually operating on a different wavelength than what we are. He's actually assuming that maybe if it's a complete zchus, maybe you wouldn't be able to reject it. So, v'albe'emes ma'ishi chalal im ha'shabes v'shar averos ein ze k'macha. He says, just violating Shabbos and other averos is not considered a macha. Al geiris rak she'obed avirim ki Yisrael b'vaday da'havei ger. He's just a Jew who does averos. About hatzedek im, I'm not sure what that stands for, right? She'ein lebeistin hashar lehizdakek beinyane geirus ke'ela, ach ein ani motzei lenachon shiar ishu al ze rabbanei hador, v'latzeis b'macha giloi neger hageirus, ki be'enei amei aretz zehu kechil Hashem. He says, however, right, I'm not sure we want to say that these situations, the purpose, the person is totally not Jewish, right? I think you should avoid these types of situations, but it's not so clear that it's totally considered to be a problem. And he says, and yeah, I probably want to avoid some Chil Hashems also, right? Because this will be, in, at least in the eyes of the Amei Haaretz, a Chil Hashem. If the child is adopted by parents who are Jewish and they're identifiably Jewish, and we say, sorry, we're not going to convert your child because you're not totally Shomer Torah Mitzvos, right? So that's a difficult situation to swallow, which has become even much more difficult as we've moved along in our history, as you know, there's a State of Israel and there's a Rabbanut and there's that type of situation. So the Rabbanut has their way of dealing with it. I don't have their files and stuff there. What they part of their approach is that living in Israel is as a Jew is like it's very conceivable that the person will be Shomer Shabbat and that person will be Shomer Kashrus, right? It is a much more Jewish atmosphere, and perhaps there will be much more permissive as to what would be considered a zechus for the child. But there is a tshuva of Rav Moshe where he comes close to addressing this. He doesn't really direct it totally straight on, but that's the last tshuva in the packet there, and that is from Evan HaEzer, Chelek Dalid Simen Chaf Vav. I see he wrote it to the Rav of in Indianapolis, and the Shaila is about a school where they it's the school is a from school, probably a Torah Masorah school, I would assume, and they realized that a large percentage of the children are not halakhically Jewish, right? Not 50%. But there's a significant portion of them that are not really Jewish. Either their mothers aren't Jewish, or they had Reform or conservative conversion, as he has put there. I remember in the first time I ever went on a job interview to a shul, it was a community that shall remain nameless. And I remember in talking to the principal of the school, out of earshot of the president, and asking him, like, so how many kids in this school are actually Jewish? And he's like, well, and it seemed to be pretty similar to the situation that Rav Moshe is describing in this thing. I mean, do we have to tell them? Are we allowed to let the children in? He says, oh, and by the way, if we decide that a third of the kids can't come to school, besides the fact that it would lead to a major ruckus in the community, right, it probably would destroy the budget of the school as well, and we'd have to close it down. So Rav Moshe says, look, you can let them in. You don't have to reject them. You don't have to worry about that you're teaching Torah to non-Jews. That seems to be the main thing, the main focus. I mean, do we have to be concerned teaching Torah to non-Jews? But then at the end, he sticks in. It's almost like he wasn't asked this question, but he sticks in about 10 lines from the bottom. He says, "Aval ha'efshar l'takin the asketanim yigayru gamhin ein tzarich kabbalas." I'm sorry. He says maybe you should convert these children, and they don't necessarily require a full kabbalas and mitzvah. Just convert them. Al das beistin v'huz zechus lahem, and it would be considered a zechus. Why is it considered a zechus? His parents probably aren't religious, right? Why is it considered a zechus? Ki mikevan shalom d'mebeis ha-sefer dati. They're going to an Orthodox school. It's a morim yirishamayim. They have teachers that are yirishamayim. Harei matzui sheyis gadol yos shomrei Torah, right? It's quite possible that they will grow up to be shomrei Torah. Shalchein afshu safek hu zechus v'adai. He says, even though maybe it's a safek whether it's a full zechus, even though it's a suffix, it's still considered a zechus. That's what Rav Moshe seems to say. V'gam afim lo yisgadu liyo shomrei Torah. Even if they don't grow up to be full shomrei Torah, mistaber shu zechus, it's still considered a merit. Derashai Yisrael sheyesh lahem kedushis Yisrael u'mitzvasin she'osim hu mitzvah v'averu hu lahem kishgaga hu gam kein zechus liyos nachrim. He says it's better for them to be Jewish, for whatever they do on the positive side will be considered a mitzvah as a Jew, and whatever they do on the negative side will be considered b'shogeg anyways. Right? It'll be considered something that wasn't done on purpose. Right? And I think, he says, I think that the Baal Batim would agree to that. The Gam HaGadolim Ibnei Yud Gimel Nami, even older children that are 13 and older, in Yomer Lehem Shetzrichim Leizgayer, that if they want, that they should convert, V'chein HaGadolos Mibnos Yud Beis, V'adei Yisratzev, U'vazet Tzarech Leishtadel V'chemuvan, L'hazbir HaDavar Be'ofen Tov, V'nachash V'adei Yishmu Lazeh. Right? And that's the way you should explain it, such that people will understand it. So that's a major breakthrough that Rav Moshe is putting out there. Right? Rav Moshe is saying that, look, you know, they grow up in an Orthodox school, right? And they may not be Orthodox later on, but at least they recognize that mitzvahs are a good thing. And, you know, if they're not Orthodox later on, it might be because they didn't realize that they have to. You know, they grew up in a home where it wasn't ma'akev. That's considered good for them. That's considered to be better than the alternative, and therefore considered a zechus. So Rav Moshe, significantly in that tshuva, is opening the window as to what would be considered a zechus for the children. And, you know, it's very helpful in navigating the gerus issues that continue to come across our desks, afilu, you know, ad hayom hazeh. Okay, so I think that pretty much covers ger katan issues. We talked about macha last week. We talked about the idea of rejection last week. There is obviously these things come up. You know, there's a lot of. Oh, one more thing along the lines of zechus. There is a tshuva in the Mari Habazak. The Mari HaBazak are the tshuvas put out by Eretz Chemda. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that. It's a sort of a kol in Eretz Yisrael, that more tzioni, that collects, that people send in tshuvas from all over the world. They send the answers and they publish them. I became familiar because a member of mine in Phoenix, their son is the Rosh Kolel, one of the Rosh Kolel in this Eretz Chemda, Rabbi Jacobowitz. So he's the one who actually writes a lot. So we have the full set actually in the shul, and there's a couple of volumes that have come out in English that this Rabbi Jacobowitz, I believe, has been the main writer on. So they actually have a tshuva of, the case that they have is where the mother, I found this last week. I believe they adopted a child, assuming that the child was going to be Jewish, but then they never, maybe the woman had a child, I think that was it, the woman had a child, wanted the child to be Jewish, but the woman ended up marrying somebody who was not Jewish, and she didn't want to separate from that husband. So now you have two non-Jewish parents, but the mother wants the child to be Jewish, and to send the child to day school. All right. She just says, look, I want to be Jewish too, but I have this husband who's not interested in it, and I can't pull him along. So can you even have a ger katan in a situation where the child is going to grow up in a home with two non-Jewish parents? That's the child that was raised. And they actually said, look, potentially you could, right? If the child's going to send to yeshiva and the parents commit to making sure that the kosher food is served in the house and goes to bar mitzvah, you know, all the things that are involved in Jewish upbringing, right? So he suggests that, look, technically it would be doable. Not sure advisable, but at least doable. So ad kedei kach, up to that point, they'd be considered to be a zechus. You know, of course, you see the questions and you see the answers, but you don't actually see the story of what happened. You know, whether they listened and what, you know, what happens several years down the road. But anyways, that even ad kedei kach, that tshuva is on the books as well. All right, so I guess we'll stop here. Next week is the issue of nemanus, the person who shows up and says, "Hi, I'm Jewish." You know, how easily do we believe them? So we'll pick up Yivar Sishem next week.
Well, just to ask a question about, so the child that is adopted, two Jewish parents, child adopted, and they don't tell the child. And then when the child finds out, they say whatever, what happens?
The child, in theory, at the moment that he finds out that he's a ger katan, he can reject it and nullify everything that he's done, right? So if he's married with kids, or she's married with kids, even crazier, right? She's married with kids, so it's over, right? Her husband is, the husband's Jewish, right? He's out, and the children end up not Jewish, it seems. Right, which is a wild situation. How does that work? that the the advisable thing is, I think all the tshuvas here are sort of stuck in, you should tell the child when he turns 13 or 12. And at that point, you know, they're excited by their bar and bat mitzvahs. They're going to get all their presents, right? And they'll be in, right? That's the advisable thing. But sometimes I can potentially see a case where they don't want the child to know. By the way, it's not just that. These cases also come up in cases of IVF and, you know, artificial insemination and things like that. It wouldn't be artificial insemination, but the other way, if the mother is a host, either a host or the genetic one, right? So it's a question how we paskin on that. Rav Schechter assumes that both of them are questions. If that's the case, if either the host mother or the genetic mother aren't Jewish, you'd require a conversion for the child, misafik, right? So the child needs to know under those circumstances, right? Came up in our shul.
Well, that would be really too bad. The host, if the genetic mother was Jewish and she was using a surrogate,
right?
Just because the child was carried at a non-Jewish surrogate, they need conversion. They can deny it, and when they get to be a surrogate,
no. So there, it's a geirus misafik. So in that scenario, the child can't really reject it because we would consider the person a Suffolk Jew anyways. Now, what exactly they would say is, well, I'm rejecting as much as I possibly can. Right? What if they say that? Right? So what do we do that? I'm not sure what we do under those circumstances. But I think you're saying it as, what do you mean? Of course it's the birth mother it's the genetic mother who's the real mother.
Child was considering that, you said
either way was a Suffolk. Right, so, well, I should say, we assume, meaning, Rav Schechter assumes, Rav Yashiv assumed, I believe Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, who passed away a week ago, right, so he actually had a psak on it. I'm forgetting which one was his, I think genetic. He held genetics all the way. But there are others who hold birth all the way. Maybe I don't remember which way he held, but he had a psak. He felt one way was the correct way. But I think more prominent in Bati Dinim, at least in America, is to assume that it's a Suffolk, that case in both directions. Okay? All right, we'll stop here. Yashar Koach, thank you for coming. Regards to Yerushalayim, Sam.